My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Mortal Kombat 2. This is a fighting game that was developed and published by Midway for the arcade in 1993.
Yeah, and ported to everything.
Yeah. So you played this on something.
Most of my time on this was Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
This episode was executive produced by Chris. Big thanks to Chris. I love it when we get a blind spot filled in, like a big series we just haven't done. As this, and I appreciate everyone's understanding. There'll be kind of a weird episode because this game, bucks our structure. We got our structure bucked
a little bit bucked, thoroughly. Loser.
Yeah, to completion. Yeah. We got our structure bucked to completion. This is a fighting game, has very little narrative. We're going to talk about characters and mechanics, but then also just like what Mortal Kombat was.
Yeah.
If you weren't alive during this, it is really hard to understand why Mortal Kombat.
How kind of all-encompassing it was.
Yes. And it makes sense. Like going back to it, I was like, oh yeah, there is a real charm to this that I understand why young me was taken in by it, even if I don't really like playing the game solo very much.
Right. Now. For reasons we're going to outline, and that is a problem kind of endemic to all of the Mortal Kombat games that I have played. I do not know if that has gotten better.
My understanding it is in the new ones.
Yeah.
But the old ones, this is a real problem. And like complaining about playing a fighting game solo and not being balanced for it, we understand like that's not how they're meant to be played.
Yeah.
It's just how I like to play games.
Yeah.
Cultural phenomenon though.
Yes.
Finally something to compete with Street Fighter.
And I was completely taken in by this.
Mm-hmm.
The first one came out when I was like 5, but by the time Mortal Kombat 2 came out, we're in the 7 to 8 zone, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a teen and I loved violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Street Fighter.
Mm.
You know, and the only thing I wanted was more decapitations in it and stuff. There is a documentary of this now. If you want to learn a little bit more about this, then we're going to be able to talk about. That's on the Digital Eclipse documentary game, Mortal Kombat, The Legacy Collection. Mm-hmm. I was looking into that today for research. I don't have it, but it's real neat. It has all the like Game Gear ports and shit. It's got Sub-Zero, Mortal Kombat Stories, Chronicles.
From the Book of Mortal Kombat.
The Book of Mortal Kombat. Like it's got everything. It seems very all-inclusive. And getting kind of behind the scenes stuff of the making of this is charming.
Yeah. Basically any of those digital eclipse games, I fucking adore. Mm-hmm. They found a way to make a new kind of thing. A new kind of
a
video
museum
game.
As a thing you can buy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Almost like interactive documentary exhibits.
And it's super great to, and not just get to see original footage, but also like see like the creators talk about it and also get like archival interviews as well. Really paints what feels like a pretty complete picture for it. I got this, I think before I even knew we were going to be covering Mortal Kombat 2. So like I kind of consumed it. So a lot of the stuff that I kind of put into the notes here, stuff that I just kind of saw, on that and go play it. It's a little bit costly right now because it's kind of new, but that is the in-depth version.
Yeah, I did not get that. I did read the book, Finish Him, the visual history of Mortal Kombat for this because it's pretty disappointing. It's not very good in terms of interview and stuff. There's actually a much better book by David Craddock. Mm-hmm. About this game, apparently, but that is not the one I got. That one's very expensive and rare. Now, the main thing I took from this that's really fun, and we'll talk about this during development, this reminds me of Doom.
Very much so.
This is just some dorks, really earnest dorks, who made a thing when they were young with like tons and tons of passion on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's very quaint. Like there's all kinds of concept art that's just like a kid's drawing of a cave.
It's just, this is what I think would be cool. Let's put it into the video game because somebody gave us the keys to this office.
It's so pure. Like the idea that this was scary at any point is fucking ludicrous.
Yeah.
When it's like the sweetest thing in the world. Like it's so jellical. It's like, it's the most, Ed Boon is the most jellical game developer. Like,
yeah, I see. Like I had already lumped it in with Doom because like these kind of came out at around roughly the same time, similar kind of like auteur stuff going on behind it and the violence. But like, yeah, coming back to it, it is impossible not to feel like they're of a piece.
Yeah. Good boys, seems like. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, obvious 2026 disclaimer in case they suck.
Yeah.
Let's get into the kind of premise of the basics of this game.
Yes. So the fiction of Mortal Kombat, instead of living on Earth, we live on Earth Realm, which for centuries has been in this constant struggle with an alternate dimension called Outworld, this kind of massive wasteland empire run by the warlord Shao Kahn.
We already have worlds and realms competing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shao Kahn expands his territory by challenging different dimensions to fighting tournaments. And these are called Mortal Kombat. The realm's best fighters are gathered to compete against his forces, which tend to be monsters.
Yes.
He sends monsters. We just send guys.
And then everybody complained when a guy with a gun showed up.
Yeah. If the Outworld wins 10 tournaments in a row, the losing realm is absorbed into Shao Kahn's wasteland empire. And then we don't know.
Which, yeah, like the, it's what it's like when worlds collide.
Yes.
I think is what happens. Like it's like weirdly when a gate town in Planescape loses like out.
A little incursion kind of thing.
Yeah. And all of this is ignoring the greater cosmology. I basically know nothing after they start adding the realm of Edenia and different stuff. Like the lore gets fucking ridiculous in this. So the first game, Mortal Kombat 1 in 1992, that is the 10th tournament after 9 consecutive wins by the forces of Outworld. It is weirdly lenient for Shao Kahn to give everybody 10 chances.
10 chances, yeah. You get the sense that they're not Shao Kahn's rules, but then they definitely are.
Yeah.
There's so much like backporting lore in this, I imagine.
Everything has been retconned. Like Shao Kahn was not present, really. The idea of him being the ruler of Outworld was not present in Mortal Kombat 1.
Because this was made by goofy kids who wanted to make a martial arts game and thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was another realm that would take over that was like martial arts realm, but with monsters and acid pits. So the lore is inconsistent. If you study it, you might know. But I do not know. So Earth's on the ropes at this point. Earth Realm.
Yes. The tournament takes place on the island of a soul-consuming sorcerer named Shang Tsung, who invites Earth Realm's forces to his island. And Earth's guardian deity, Raiden, assembles a crew. He's like a thunder god kind of guy.
Yeah, gets the best fighters.
Christopher Lambert.
Canonically, the Shaolin monk Liu Kang wins the fight, defeating Shang Tsung's champion Goro, and then defeating Shang Tsung himself. That's Mortal Kombat 1.
Yes.
And this kind of started an era for the Mortal Kombat games, like their 2D era.
Yeah.
If you've never seen Mortal Kombat, you know, most video games at the time were sprites. Sometimes you had a Donkey Kong Country throw in there. These were different. This were sprites made out of digitized stills of live actors.
Yeah.
So it's not the first to have done that. Pit Fighter did it first, but Pit Fighter's a way worse game.
Pit Fighter is so bad.
it's a horrible fucking game. This is the first game to do it well.
Yeah. To incorporate it and have it be a real, not just a gee whiz curiosity, right?
Yeah.
And the emphasis in putting this together was size, like sprite size and spectacle. It was kind of designed to draw a crowd. People wanted to see fucked up shit happening on a screen and cheer it on.
Yeah. And it looks good, like for the time. It looks like nothing else. Mm-hmm. It's also, they tried to make it play differently than Street Fighter, which is really admirable.
Yeah.
You know, Street Fighter, they wanted to not only make it look different, but play different than this.
Yeah.
And these choices are going to be things like your mileage will vary on. One of the things in the lead up to this I was trying to find out is, does Mortal Kombat 2 have like a competitive fighting scene? You know, the way that Street Fighter is still played. You can go to Evo mm-hmm. and watch that game. Like, do people still play Street Fighter? And the answer is kinda.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who prefer this kind of... this thing's lemon styles. Like, there are people who like it. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is not what I was raised with. I play this as a kid, but doing things like having a block button, you know, there are mm-hmm. five buttons, including a block button, fucks me up.
Yeah. No, I instinctually, when I want to block, I press back.
Yeah. It's just what I do. And having a block button is just wild. There's five buttons on this, a block, and then high and low punches and kicks. They're mm-hmm. originally going to have seven buttons, which is more fingers than there are. So that wouldn't have been a great idea.
Yeah. Also, the positioning of the block button on the arcade cabinet was fucking wild. You would think,
in the middle.
Yeah, in the middle. You would think, okay, well, I can rest my right thumb on the block button. Fucking nope.
No. Yeah, only if you were only doing one side of punches or kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the block worked differently than in Street Fighter 2. In Street Fighter 2, if you block, you have to press backward, kind of puts you on the retreat a little bit, but it blocks all of the damage, right? In this, you block, you still take, like, you take, like, chip damage.
You take chip damage in Street Fighter.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
That's great.
But the knockback here is minimal. Like, this is the idea would be, like, you can counterattack out of this if you would like to.
Yeah. Every character has basic moves and a couple combo inputs. There are uppercuts and sweeps. Love the uppercut in this game. It is mm-hmm. iconic.
The sound design makes it, I think.
It's really also in terms of, like, key animations. Mm-hmm. It's drawn the Marvel way. Like, you get the first frame and the last frame are really powerful.
Yeah.
And I love how that contrasts with any kind of punch, which are, I realized why they seem so weak to me. And mm-hmm. this way, it just looks like somebody, like, reaching forward and kind of pushing somebody off. There's no wind up.
Yeah.
They just extend their hands straight out with no going back. Like they're working a rowing machine or something.
they originally had those, but in trying to fit the game onto the RAM, you know, you only have a limited number of sprites that you can put in. They had to cut a lot of the, like, wind up frames, like the anticipation is what that's called in animation. So you had that, plus also even more of them were cut in order to make it snappier. So, like, you know, so there wouldn't be, like, a Prince of Persia style delay in between pressing and when the hit comes through. The initial versions of it were really kind of delayed and floaty, is my impression.
Having human actors, like, you can kind of cheat that kind of thing with a sprite.
Yeah.
And have a little bit of a wind up. Here they have none, and it looks really silly. It's one of my favorite things.
So every character has access to those basic moves. And then they also have special moves a la Street Fighter. It is really quaint, knowing how fighting games are today, going back and looking at the move list for the original Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. you know, and also, like, Mortal Kombat 2, not too much was added. Like, each character has two special moves in the, in the original Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. They upgrade to, like, three, maybe four. In the second one. A lot of times these differentiate at the time for having, there are characters who use quarter circles and use traditional mm-hmm. Things, but this added like taps to special moves. I remember that being really noteworthy at the time. So, like, forward, back, forward. You know, that's mm-hmm. not a thing that is a special move in Street Fighter. It was in Mortal Kombat.
Right.
Which was neat. Mm-hmm. And the character moves are magic powers. And the characters here are little, like, tropey guys. They are archetypes, and they have magic they can do, basically. Silly shit they can do. This Mortal Kombat 2 got more silly than the first one.
Mm-hmm. And the sillier it gets, the more I likes it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
The big back-of-the-box quote, when a player loses a match, they'll stand there, and they get real dizzy, and the game will go, finish him. And you can do one last attack. But if you put in a certain combo, you perform a fatality, and this is a finishing move. It kills the opponent. It's very gory and elaborate in a very cute way. There is no gameplay advantage to this.
Nope.
This is something you purely do for the love of the game.
This is you stunting on somebody at the arcade.
And seeing a video game spectacle.
Yes.
Like, I remember when I was playing this at home, I wanted to see all of these. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't feel bad because I lost. It was, oh, do the fucking fatality on me.
Please, yes.
Like, yeah, I got to see 10 femurs pop out of my torso.
where are they keeping all them femurs, though?
I got extra femes. So this is incredible. This was a sea change kind of thing. This is so cool and fun. Yeah. And the series continued with it. It's what it's known for. Eventually, this is also something where I think that they suffer as they get more realistic.
Yeah, yeah. Like the new ones do like x-ray fatalities, where you can kind of like see inside the body as it goes. Yeah, I don't know.
Too much. I just, you know, if you watch a compilation with a K of all the fatalities in a row, they get less fun as they go, as they get more realistic. Still sometimes fun things happen, but early on when it's just explosions of femurs, it's a treat.
Yeah.
It is really somebody drawing on the back of a notepad or a notebook.
Yeah. Apparently, like the modern Mortal Kombat games, one of the labor complaints against NetherRealms is that in order to research how to make them as gory as people expect, people have to look at like fucking car crash. Like aftermath photos and stuff, mutilated animals and things. Like people who work there reportedly get like PTSD from looking at it. Yeah, yeah. But I generally agree when it's like, oh, wouldn't it be super sweet if you rip this guy's, literally that's what it was. Like, okay, well, we can decapitate, but like, what if he ripped his head off and the spine came with it? Yeah. That's the one that wouldn't I that very distinctly grim. Remember seeing. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely iconic. Like the image for Mortal Kombat to me is Sub-Zero standing with a loose spine.
Yeah. Something that is really important is that none of these secret moves or fatalities were documented. Sometimes you would get like move lists on the cabinet themselves. No, nothing here. People had to see the CPU enemies doing them and then kind of try to discover how they could do them themselves. And then these spread as rumors.
They spread as rumors and they were published in magazines.
Yes.
Was the other thing. I remember, was never in a situation where anyone intuited one of these. Yeah. We just bought video game magazines that told us them, mm-hmm. but it still felt cool. Like we were buying a secret thing we could show off.
Yeah. We had like handwritten move lists that were copied off of each other and passed around. Yeah. Yeah.
And this is part of Mortal Kombat's whole steez, which is that it wants to have you discover as you're playing it. These are not told. There are also tons of secrets. Mm-hmm. There are all these hints about unlocking and playing a hidden character named Reptile. This continues for the whole series.
Yeah.
And these characters tend to not be very good, and they're just palette swaps. Mm-hmm. But that is so neat. Yeah. At the time, I was just like, oh, this is really mysterious. If I do X, Y, and Z, I'll fight Jade. You know, I'll go to another realm and fight Jade. That's crazy. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that. No.
Something that is fun to see is that as fidelity is added and as they decide, fuck, we might as well just throw it in, those palette swap characters end up getting their own personality and model and differentiation. Yeah. Like, that is something that, like, I'm not terribly interested in playing, especially, like, the PS2 ones, but, like, apparently that's where all that starts, is, like, mm-hmm. all these, you know, start getting their own, you know, weird little, you know, lore that I am fascinated by in, like, a less enthusiastic version of my fascination with Resident Evil lore, right?
I'm interested that it exists, yes. But I'm not interested enough to read it.
No.
Which means not interested, I guess. Like, that's another way of saying I don't care about it. At some point, I'll play one of those story ones because those are supposed to be fun. But in terms of like learning the background of Melina, I could not give a shit.
Yeah, the 2011 one's pretty great. I played that when it first came out. That is a retelling of the story of 1, 2, and 3. After like a timeline reboot kind of thing. That's neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first Mortal Kombat was marked by this mechanic of juggling. This was a programming mistake. If you got a character kind of stung locked in the air, you could just kind of attack them and they would, you know, juggle. They'd eventually die as they were being punched in the feet until they couldn't fall down.
Yes. This was de-emphasized later on. I just think it's funny that between this and Devil May Cry, people keep on accidentally discovering this.
Yeah.
Something that I'm going to go out on a limb here. This is just me. One of the things that makes Mortal Kombat more difficult to go back to than Street Fighter 2, even in competitive play against a human, is that it feels very stiff. There's not a lot of fluidity between the moves. And I put this down to the use of digital actors.
I think this controls fine to me. Like, the fluidity of actually moving my guy around feels good. The animations do not have enough in-between frames to look fluid, and that can affect things for sure, but it does feel responsive to me, I guess, rather than stiff. I was surprised going into this and kind of researching it that there is a little bit more like balance and hitbox shit going on, like higher level fighting game things in this than I expected, that people do kind of pick up on. Like, it's there if you want it. It's a little bit harder to get than Street Fighter, but that's because Street Fighter is fucking Capcom and they're the GOAT.
Yeah.
Like, I don't prefer this to Street Fighter, but I do think that it feels pretty good in the hands to me. It doesn't always look good in the eyes.
Yeah. I also find finding or creating combos to be pretty rough in this.
Yeah. It's a little harder. Like, it wasn't something that they originally planned for.
Kind of intended,
famously, players discovered it. Mm-hmm. That you could do these combos.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, this sucks. This is a bad single player game. It starts you out, it is still balanced for the arcade. Mm-hmm. The idea is the first couple of matches are going to be nice and winnable because they want your quarter and they want you to feel good. And then the AI ramps up, and the only way the AI can ramp up is through input reading. Yeah. It's an infamous game for that. And as you move further up the ladder, the computer will cheat more. It just knows what you're going to do. It not only input reads, it starts getting abilities you don't have. Mm-hmm. It can interrupt things that you can't interrupt. It can just kind of decide not to be hit by things. Uh-huh. This is fucking egregious.
It's fucking awful. Like special moves that would take, just a little bit of wiggling on your part, like a little bit of time to input, like they can be deployed immediately. They can block. They can just decide this is not going to hit me.
And there's not, Street Fighter's not innocent of that. Like high level Street Fighter play, Guile can just instantly do flash kicks, which you have to charge and just throw, tons of his sonic booms. Yeah. This game introduces it earlier. And feels like it breaks the rules a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like that breaks the timing rules. This breaks like priority rules.
Yes. A YouTuber named Modern Vintage Gamer did a video with a very good, simple explanation of how this of how this works, the way that it's implemented. Obviously, a computer can react more quickly than you. There's just a variable that ticks up as you proceed up the ladder that modifies what percentage of attacks are going to be allowed to land.
Yeah. And a wild thing is that in the collection version, the digital clips thing, it has like a rewind feature, kind of like a save state thing, and doing that ups that counter. It's like a glitch. Yeah. It makes the enemy better at anticipating your moves if you try something again, which seems unintended. It's weird.
Yeah.
It is a sloppy way to handle balance, I guess.
Yes.
It feels like. I don't know how I would do it.
No.
Other than just move numbers. Like, I'm not a game designer, but it's a feel bad way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when they just, instantly block from like a different direction, which they, would not be able to do.
The throw stuff drives me fucking crazy.
Right.
Like, you can be nowhere near and just get thrown and then kind of chain thrown through that. I've had people also walk through my sweeps.
Yep.
It's like they stepped over my leg, which I understand in real life, you could just walk over a sweep, but Ryan shouldn't be able to do that.
So like I hit the wall with these input reading, I can't go higher. So I did a little bit of like multiplayer on the collection, which has a cool feature where you can just like set up a virtual arcade, basically like a lobby room where people can come in. And then you have like a queue where you just fight against each other. I had the floor swept with me, but it was in a way that did not feel as bullshitty as this. Yeah.
Another way this works. So I played this on my little one-up arcade thing, my little fakie arcade cabinet that emulates the arcade version. Mm-hmm. When you continue and put another quarter, it does tick that meter down.
Okay.
So having unlimited virtual money allowed me to go through the game. In real life, this would have cost me a lot of money, and it would have been like 1993 money.
Yeah.
It would not have been worth it. But with unlimited tries, unlimited quarters, I could do it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about development.
Yeah, let's talk about where this came from. This was an incredibly small team working over the course of 8 months. The team was made up of a programmer, Ed Boone, an artist and writer, John Tobias, kind of an artist and kind of like digital graphics programmer, John Vogel, who was also the Toasty guy. No, wait. And the sound designer and composer, Dan Forden, who is the Toasty guy.
Yeah. Toasty. Gwen, if you want to put that in at any point in the episode, you can. Boone and Tobias are generally credited with kind of the initial concept and kind of pushing the series through development in the 90s. Ed Boone was the programmer. He grew up wanting to make games, but was hired by Midway to make pinball games. He wanted to make video games. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he worked his way over to the game division, working on High Impact Football, which also had digitized actors, and Smash TV, which also had ultraviolence.
Yes. And he met John Tobias working on Smash TV. John Tobias, he was a comics artist who was working on the Real Ghostbusters comic at the time he was hired. And they became buddies. And they decided, you know, just because this is late 80s Midway, like you just get free reign, you can pitch what you want. They wanted to make a game like Karate Champ, but featuring digitized actors.
Yeah. They even, you know, they talked about this being literally based on like Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and you actually using the actor, like having a kumite, a blood sport.
Yeah.
They were not allowed, but Street Fighter II became this huge phenomenon and Midway wanted the team to move forward with this concept because they needed a Street Fighter.
Yes.
Through this. And these were just, again, young, charming dorks who really liked Kung Fu and martial arts movies. Mm-hmm. They love Big Trouble in Little China. Like they're not serious about the art form in a way. I guess, right. Like, this does not, I'll grow on a limb. This does not sound, feel culturally respectful.
No. People complained at the time, too.
A lot of voices from Liu Kang that get you sent to the principal's office. You know, if you're doing Liu Kang impersonations in school, things like that. But there is love there for it that I think is sweet, even if it is, like, a little bit misguided.
Fuck, Ed Boon doing the voiceover of Shang Tsung as the announcer in Mortal Kombat 1.
It's not great. Not good behavior. 1993.
Yes. They had this division of labor. John Tobias would work with the kind of like costumers and actors to direct and capture the live footage straight to like a Hi-8 tape, like a basically camcorder mini VHS kind of deal. He would select frames to digitize and remove the background from and then send it to Ed Boone, who would animate them and then implement them with the game logic.
Yeah. And you can watch a lot of this stuff. It's on that collection. There's also a bunch of it on YouTube of watching these photo sessions. They're real sweet. Mm-hmm. They seem like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing, even like sometimes they complain about the ergonomics of the situation, but like they seem like they like each other here. And they need to be sweaty and shiny. So they're constantly being spritzed with water, which I imagine is kind of nice, like being a lettuce at the store.
Yeah, why does lettuce get to have a water park at the grocery store? Nice.
Well, it has to always be shiny. It's because you digitize the lettuce for mortal. I was going to say mortal cabbage, mortal kale bat. I don't care.
I don't know. Fuck it. It sucks. Dump it.
I'm going to go home and sleep.
But this footage is real fun to watch because like you see them improvise, like the idea of giving Scorpion like the grappling hook, which is just called in the moment a spear, and they stuck with it, was just like improvised. Like John Tobias was like, okay, like what if you reach behind you, and they just like immediately just like threw this out, and then we could add it later, and then they bring it in. That, and it's real fun to see the completely fluid animation, the completely fluid version of the move animation that you recognize, right?
Yeah,
like Liu Kang's bicycle kick, like him just doing that on a chair,
sitting on a chair,
on a rolling chair. Yeah,
it's really cute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had to name the game. They had a bunch of different ideas for this, but they ended up doing Mortal Kombat with a K because it was easier to trademark than Mortal Kombat with a C. And this came from a whiteboard joke by a Midway pinball employee named Steve Ritchie, who wrote that on there with a K. Yeah. And they just stuck.
Mm-hmm. And became a thing. Like for me, as a young kid, whose name began with K, I was like, yeah, everything could be K's now. This is before I learned about the Ku Klux Klan. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But not before these people learned about it, as you'll see the secret fighter. Nah, just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And so they tested this game anonymously. A lot of arcade games were tested like this. Just if you lived around Chicago, you would just run into a brand new Midway game in the wild with developers just kind of watching from the side, seeing how people liked it. And it was like immediately a huge hit at the arcades where it was deployed. Like people were figuring out the hidden moves and stuff.
Yeah, they loved it. It went in wide release in 1992, and this became huge in America. People lost it. This was like Bart Mania, mm-hmm. a little bit. Like this was in magazines, commercials, everything for a video game. And this was back when video games had commercials.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of commercials. This was hype. This was 2X Pimpy, 3X Bape levels of hype. Published it to home consoles and just put so much money into marketing them. And we had Mortal Monday. I've talked about it before on shows. Me going out in the street and yelling Mortal Kombat like they did on the commercial. Because I thought that was cool. Yeah. I was just like, no, they did it. I'm so fucking hyped for this. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to go outside and yell. One of the truly dorkiest things I've ever done.
Incredibly charming, though. I like that quite a bit.
Very young. And imagine I'm like real roly-poly. I got like a Prince Valiant haircut. You know, like I'm not tall, like super tall yet. It's a very funny image. It looks like Dennis the Menace's like country cousin going out and doing it.
It's a good commercial if you go watch it still today. Like it's really hype. Boone and Tobias were like confused as to why Acclaim was going to put so much money into marketing it. I don't know that you get Mortal Kombat being such a huge phenomenon, like as big as it ended up getting, without being fucking everywhere because of the advertising campaign.
Well, and because of the home ports. Like there was a limit. This was a big time for the arcade, but there is a kind of a ceiling on how big the arcade could be. This is during that kind of transition.
Yeah.
You know, where more people, because of Super Nintendo, more powerful systems, more people were getting arcade experiences at home. Mm-hmm. You could play Final Fight on your Super Nintendo and it was basically Final Fight.
Yeah.
Yes, you can do the multiplayer, et cetera, et cetera. But like it was basically Final Fight. It looked exactly the same. Same thing with Street Fighter. Like you had to get that market. And that's how I mostly played it as well. Mm-hmm. So like it got me.
What was the first, like what was your first exposure? Do you remember when you first saw Mortal Kombat or played it?
I played it in the arcade. Mortal Kombat 1 was the first time I played it. And I ended up watching it. What I do at arcades at the time was watch people play games. My dad...
Because
it's free. My dad would park me in the arcade with $5 and then go do something that need not be specified. And I would have all night, basically, and I'd have $5 to last. Mm-hmm. Anything. I didn't drink water the whole time. I don't know how it worked. But I would just go around watching people play games, and the fighting games always had the biggest crowds around them, and they're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why there's like Evo. So I watched it. I don't even know if I played it the first time I saw it. I just watched people play it.
Yeah.
And it was just really mind-blowing and cool. And I was a Street Fighter partisan at the time and was very surprised to see this have a bigger crowd, you know, when it was new.
Yeah. My first exposure to it was actually a display. It was the SNES demo unit set up at a store in my town called Service Merchandise, which was
talked about before.
Yeah, it was like a catalog store. Like you walked through, everything was on display, but like you didn't have a cart. You grabbed a slip, and then all of the stuff was kind of like loaded onto a conveyor belt and waiting for you after you checked out. It was kind of
like
neat.
IKEA, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
It was IKEA slips.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it was just there. And I have a distinct recollection of being there. I believe it was with my dad and seeing the Sub-Zero rip a hat off and the spine comes out. And I would have been like maybe five or six, you know, and it was never hidden. It wasn't like, oh no, you can't see this. It was like, yes, okay, I need to pay attention to this. I need to try and play this when it's my turn. And then just tons of great memories like playing. There was a unit in front of a department store called Hills here in town that my dad would always take us to when we went in there.
It was real neat at the time. Mm-hmm. It's worth talking about that, you know, we're going to get into this a little bit, you know, why this route had reach. It also drew attention
Yes.
There was a comic that was really popular. One of the game facts that's on this is like, will this character appear in the comic? Very sweet. There's an album. We talked about that in Adaptation Decay. It's great. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more albums we could do for that show.
Same.
Because this happened and because this was kind of the beginning, not the very beginning of this, like Death Race, but this was one of the first times there was video game violence controversies. There were congressional hearings, 1993, along with Night Trap. Mm-hmm. And this is, not to sound too much like a gamer rights guy, stupid.
Incredibly stupid.
Yeah. In retrospect, the idea of being scared of this is such colossal pussy behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, good God.
Yeah.
It's so silly. Like, it's all femurs. Uh-huh. Like, if somebody explodes and 10 femurs come out of them, that's something that happens in Tom and Jerry. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be scared of that. What's wrong with you, you dorks? Like, it's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and this was huge. Like, this was on TV all the time. Yeah. Like,
led to the
ESRB eventually. They had real change.
Yeah. The ESRB was just adopted by the industry itself because the government was threatening to regulate it. Also, like, you can just like go watch that, like watch the footage of that, the politicians and the people that they brought up to testify were just fucking lying.
Yeah. You know, when they say the truth, they talk about it like it's really happening, which is very funny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the man tells you to, and I quote, finish your opponent.
Yeah.
Like, that's... I understand 2026, that means jerk him off. Uh-huh. In 1993, it wasn't scary, though.
No.
Like, when you were watching, you know, a violent movie, there weren't being, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme wasn't saying he's going to finish somebody.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's not scary.
Not at all.
You know, it's not serious. It's just a game. No. You don't have to spit on me.
And like, you would as a kid play Mortal Kombat, like play Kung Fu Fight or whatever, but you were doing that anyway, just because it was in the air. Like, that was just a kind of media that was, you know, influential for kids.
And ugh. Like, I'm not going to say the final word on whether, you know, how desensitization to violence works or what have you. I will say that even at that age, I had enough humanity in me to understand the difference between fiction and reality.
Mm-hmm.
And something that was violent for fun, it was never more harmful than a dog with a chew toy.
Yeah.
Like, it was literally that. I always knew pretend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point in which I ever thought like, man, that's disturbing. I'm sure there are Rods and Todd Flanders out there who had nightmares about Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm.
Not talking down to you. I'm just saying that you doing that should not mean that nobody can get a Mortal Kombat.
Right.
The dogs have their chew toys, even if they freak you out.
It's hard not to see it as incredibly cynical. Won't somebody think of the children?
Yes.
Point scoring politics, right?
Yeah.
And like, it was Democrats. Like, you know, Joseph Lieberman was getting up there and, you know, just kind of leading this charge. Sucked. And whenever that pops up, I don't know, it established a lot of patterns that still happen to this day.
It's really funny to establish those patterns, and then there are knock-on, like, downstream effects, like an entire culture of web comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Penny Arcade exists because of that, because they're fighting against this.
Yeah.
You know, all those comics about Jack Smith and shit. It's silly. Like, in the fullness of history, it's a stupid culture.
Yeah. No,
it's not a good culture we have here in the States. Like, we've done a lot of stupid shits.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them.
For their part, Boone and Tobias thought the rating system was a good idea. Like, when this controversy came around, they were like, oh yeah, no, we didn't make this for kids. Like, we're these dirtbag 20-year-olds who wanted to make a game for other dirtbag 20-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we wanted to make for Waynes and Garths of the world. And then they eventually, in number two, they end up making fun of this, which we'll talk about, a joke I really appreciate.
Yeah.
So they made a sequel. They hadn't even thought about making Mortal Kombat 2, but it blew up. Mm-hmm. And they were talking to Midway. They really wanted to make a Star Wars game, but Midway said, no, this printed money. We would like more money.
Yeah.
What if we give you this money and more team? You get make bigger game, get more money.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes.
Yes. And they're like, cool. We had all of these things that we were not able to incorporate because of budget, time, technology, et cetera. We get a second bite at it. And what ultimately came out was better than Mortal Kombat 1 in every way.
Yeah. Even though at the time, like, this is the kind of thing people would freak out about now for being an iterative sequel when you expect more kind of CG and shit. At the time, this was just the good version of it. There's no reason to play Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
The moves are faster and smoother, quite a bit. So it's not as stiff. It looks a lot better. Mm-hmm. They're using that same kind of graphics pipeline with the digitized photos, but they ditched the analog tape in favor of doing images straight into a computer.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah.
And the images look better because the contrast is higher. The artists are able to kind of punch up the sprites and animations and make them look just better on the screen.
Yeah. Although going back to Mortal Kombat 1, I do have some affection for like the washed out VHS tape, almost like Lethal Enforcer-ness to it.
Yes. It does have a Lethal Enforcer-tude of like 10.
Yeah. They got a bunch of the same actors to come back and play these characters. You can see a lot of them, like I mean at least at Midwest Gaming Classic. Like these guys still go around to conventions, sign autographs and stuff.
They started a couple of years ago. They started doing this, like there was a demand for it. Yeah, I remember a buddy, friend of the show, Brad from Wisconsin, went and sang karaoke with Scorpion the first night that they showed up there.
Holy
like,
shit.
When partied and was doing karaoke with Scorpion, the voice actor for Scorpion, which is like, whoa. What does Scorpion sing? Was it a song by the Scorpions? Does he like that music? I don't know.
Yeah. Also, it's very funny because the actor who played Shang Tsung is just a doctor.
Yeah. So he's credited as doctor every time. I love it. Yeah. It's like in The Running Man, Dr. Sub-Zero.
Johnny Cage's actor, this is just a story from the set, Daniel Pacina, was a nightmare to work with. Kept on trying to override Tobias's direction and just whipping out, like, what if I did this? Like, here's a cool idea for a move. And this is why Johnny Cage doesn't appear in Mortal Kombat 3. He was killed off in between.
He eventually comes back. He's the main character in a lot of the movies.
Yeah.
He's like weirdly iconic for the show, for the movie, the game series. Mm-hmm. Because this takes place in the Outworld, they needed better and more surreal backdrops. And this allowed, they had a new artist, Tony Goski, to make digital paintings. They didn't use photographed backgrounds before. They could do paintings and kind of let their imagination run wild.
This shit rules. I love the swirling portals and weird skies and stuff.
Yeah. It's really good looking. It'd be a good backdrop for a computer, just an empty stage.
Yeah.
It's a good desktop.
Mm. Oh. They added more characters. They expanded it from 8 to 12 characters. They removed Kano and Sonya Blade because they were unpopular. In the story, they were captured by Shao Kahn, and you can see them chained up in one of the stages.
Yeah. And a fun rumor was that Shao Kahn would turn into Kano.
Yeah.
And they encouraged this in the code. They have a thing called Kano Transformation Counter. That ticks up, that it corresponds to nothing.
Yep.
It's just to piss people off. And they're fun little dirtbag 20-year-old imps. And
I love it.
They beefed up kind of the basic moves, so things felt weightier. I still feel like this is one of the most weighty uppercuts in games, like one of the hardest hits that you can see. And then they added roundhouse kicks. They were given an effect like the uppercut.
Yeah.
You know, except throwing characters back.
Yeah, launching them horizontally across the stage. It rules.
Yeah.
You could also perform certain actions and special attacks, like in midair. Some characters have midair grabs that they can do. And the reliance on juggling was reduced. It's still there, though.
Yeah. It also, this is where I started noticing some other than just the block button controls, some base differences playing Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter. And one of them is that In Mortal Kombat, basic moves do a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Much more so than Street Fighter. Like an uppercut on the base level does like 25% health. So it kind of turns this in a multiplayer thing into much more of a Yomi experience because every hit is going to matter so much.
Yeah.
Eventually, it's less so if you're playing against the computer because they start getting like damage resistance. Like your uppercuts are not going to do a quarter of Kentaro's health.
Nope.
But in, you know, against a player, it's going to. So it ends up having this really high risk, high reward kind of play style that makes winning and losing in this game fast, I found. Which means that when you play it like high level, if you look up high level play, it's extremely defensive.
Yes.
Weirdly enough, like when you play against the computer, you have to be aggressive. Against other players, the best way to play is to play very defensive and reactionary.
It's a lot of drawing people out.
Yeah. Yeah, which is like a thing that happens in fighting games generally. That's like a Smash Brothers thing too. But it's neat how this thing that is very aggressive and violent, the mechanics of it suggested a very non-aggressive, violent way to play.
Yeah, you have to turtle, which is a fun name for a tactic.
Yeah. and a Mortal Kombat fighter.
the entourage realm. the spectacle was upped. Each character had two fatalities now, and there were more stage-specific fatalities. I can only imagine the look on my face when I saw somebody uppercut an opponent into the acid in the back of that one level. Yeah.
Beautiful. And then one of my favorite things of all time, the way they made fun of the violence controversy was by adding two new finishers, Babalities and Friendships. Babalities, you turn your opponent into a baby.
A baby version of you.
yeah, and they have like the hat and stuff, you know, or accessories. Then what happened to the baby? I presume you adopt it. Like, that instance of that baby, you have a son or a daughter now. And then Friendships, which are legitimately funny jokes to me that make me laugh now. The one Sub-Zero pulling out a little Sub-Zero action figure and saying, buy a Sub-Zero toy, is really cute and funny. Yep. That makes me laugh to this day. I think it's great.
The Shang Tsung's rainbow that he makes, just like, I'm going to use my magic to delight you.
It genuinely makes me laugh. I think it's very funny.
I was watching a compilation of these earlier today, and I completely forgot about Liu Kang's disco dance.
Yeah, it's real cute. Like, it's so pure, and so good. I love these. And they're going to do a lot more of these, and they get less interesting.
Yeah,
animalities I don't give a shit about, or bestialities. I can't remember what they're called. I don't think they're called bestialities.
No, they're animalities.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. But those I don't care about. This is the peak for me in terms of endings.
Yeah. So the arcade version was released kind of in several iterations between 1993 and 1994, correcting bugs, adding content, stuff like that. And it was an even bigger success. People fucking love this. They were ready for more. They were ready for different. And it heightened Mortal Mania even more.
Yeah. So we got a movie. We've covered so much Mortal Kombat stuff on the network, just none of the games.
Yep.
If you want to hear us talk about this phenomenon generally, adaptation decay is the place to go. Mm-hmm. This released the original Mortal Kombat film, which some people say is one of the good video game films. A little skeptical there, but at the time I did watch the shit out of it.
It's played way more as a buddy comedy than you would want it to be.
Yeah. You wouldn't expect it to be as humorous without even having any friendships. Mortal Kombat 2 was ported to everything, including like the weird portable ports that are, like, people like. Which is crazy. And it kind of shifted the balance. On Mortal Kombat 1, the Genesis was the version you'd want because you could unlock the gore for it. Mortal Kombat 2, the gore just was unlocked by default. Yeah. And the Genesis version looked worse, had smaller sprites, and you only had 3 buttons default.
Yeah.
That does not work. So the SNES version was not preferred for MK1, but is preferred for MK2.
Yes. Nintendo got wise. They saw that the Genesis version outsold their version 3-1, I believe, was the ratio. They decided to allow the blood and gore, you know, hoping that it would sell systems. This was a genuine, this was like a genuine discussion in that weird, dumb console war.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very funny that, you know, their principals are like, well,
people, if it'll make us money.
Yeah. Like, businesses are going to be businesses.
Yeah.
This port stands up really well. Yeah, I played on my little arcade thing, and then on this emulator, played the Super Nintendo version, and it still feels the same and holds up very well, as we mentioned. Yeah.
It's the one John Tobias likes the most.
Yeah. The portable versions are lauded in terms of adaptation. Imagine the Game Boy, where you have 2 buttons. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's pretty good for a Game Boy fighting game.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember if I've ever played it before, but apparently it's good.
Yeah, the Mortal Kombat 2 specifically, Mortal Kombat 1 on the Game Boy is a notorious disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first versions, the first home versions came out slightly before the ESRB was implemented, but Acclaim went ahead and slapped a warning label on the boxes anyway. That maybe increased sales.
Yeah, it looks scary. You know, parental warning. Mortal Kombat 2 was banned in Germany, censored in Japan. The way they censor this, black and white fatalities, I get, but the way they always censor things is have green blood.
Mm-hmm.
In the Mortal Kombat 1 version, it was supposed to be sweat that came out, but now they're all aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's sweat, that's an inhuman amount of sweat. That's Ben Shapiro's like, go to the doctor, you can't be that wet sweat. Like, that's so much fucking sweat to come out.
God, I remember all the, just the white splashes.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Because the home version was so successful, a bunch of the actors sued Midway for royalties and the use of their likeness. They were unsuccessful. I don't know the details of this, but generally I want actors to get money.
Yes. Yeah. And there were more rumors. I was not privy to a lot of these. Some of them got kind of gross. Because you had these two sexy ninja lady characters in the game, people thought, well, we've got babalities. We have friendships. Why don't we have nudalities or sexualities? Finishers sexuality for Katana and Melina.
Yeah, just the, I want to see the Mortal Kombat voice say that. Sexuality. Like it's a sample from a Madonna song.
Yep. Of the era.
She'd sometimes get like a robot to say sexuality as a part of the beat. The team encouraged these. They encouraged all secrets.
Yeah.
Gross. 1993 as well. I wanted to see them naked. This is before the Tomb Raider naked code as well.
Yeah.
This lasted for a big chunk of the 90s. Not good behavior, but something that you're going to get with the culture of secrecy around Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. People really, really, really want to see nude video game characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, I was fucking people. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I would have looked the shit out of that.
I was too young. Too pure.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty sexual.
Yeah.
You weren't pure. It's good that you, I wouldn't consider that purity. That's just, you're right on schedule.
That's really depressing. At that point.
It'd be real weird if you were, you know, weren't. Like the world's horniest five-year-old who's like, yes, show me Melina. Like that, that's not good.
No, that's a mandatory report right there. Yeah,
that's a the boy situation. Like you didn't follow the rules.
Yeah. Jesus. There were other rumors, like Shang Tsung being able to morph into characters from the first game, Goro and Kano specifically. And then people like misinterpreted rumors about unlocking the game's characters. Like occasionally Smoke or Jade would show up and then just say something cryptic. And this like prompted people to come up with the name Hornbuckle, for a palette swapped Liu Kang, that was used in the background of one of the bridge fights.
Yeah. It started as, a roadside blueberry pie stand, but they decided to be better as a martial artist.
Yeah.
For this. a bunch of rumors were untrue, but then became true later. Animalities they would do. There's the secret character of Ermac and Scarlet, which are, you know, the original footage of the ninja characters had them in red clothing because it would show up better on the blue screen. When these got leaked, they're like, oh, there's a red version of the ninja.
Yeah. This was also like, I think this was like an EGM rumor as well. Ermac just stands for error macro. It's just an error message that comes out. Ermac is my guy in Mortal Kombat 3. He's got telekinesis. Gotcha. He rules.
I never really got, because it probably made a difference. I never really got into Mortal Kombat 3 very much.
Yeah.
Much bigger roster. But this peaked with 2 for me.
Yeah.
There's Scorch, who is a guy in the pit number 2, that stage in the background that people thought would become playable. He eventually became Blaze, the final boss in Mortal Kombat Armageddon.
Yeah.
Blaze, slightly less American Gladiator name than Scorch, despite actually being an American Gladiator's name.
Paradoxically. Let's talk about Mortal Kombat 2. Like the story and the characters. Like, I've got shit written about all of the characters. I don't want to go through them just individually. I think we can ping pong, maybe starting with our favorites.
Yeah, and we also don't just need to list all the moves. Like, we can't talk about the kind of people they are.
That's just reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be weird. There is a story to this, just barely. Shang Tsung, since he didn't win that tournament, he's about to be executed by Shao Kahn, but he goes, hey, I got an idea. If we invite the fighters to a Mortal Kombat, they have to do it. So what if we host it at our house?
Yeah.
And this being the first time this occurred to them is fucking wild. And the idea of you can't refuse the invitation. Mm-hmm. Like, you get the invitation, you're like, go to Outworld. And they're like, well, shit, you know, sorry. Like, call into work. I gotta go to Outworld for a while and be trapped in this realm.
Yeah, no, God, yeah, yeah. Dude's realmed. I got realmed.
Yeah, it's super realmed. And Shao Kahn's like, cool, you know, I'm pissed off at them for winning. We can take them by force. We're gonna take their champions to our world, get rid of them, and then we're gonna invade.
Yes.
Again, weird that's the first time it occurred to people, because the implication is he's conquered other worlds before.
Yes. And the invasion of Earth is the story of Mortal Kombat 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got one of the premier characters because of a Blanka. You always had to have a monster on the team. Mm-hmm. And we had Baraka. Here, this is Shao Kahn's enforcer. He's a Tarkatan, these mutants from the Outworld. And they have big needle teeth. They have blades that can come out of the wrist. Very fun to watch the motion capture on this guy.
It's incredibly funny. The mask that they have on him looks so fucking shitty.
It's so shitty. And the aluminum foil claws. Uh-huh. Like, they look, you know, they're just like, they're not even cardboard stiff.
No.
Yes.
Very funny. This was primarily primarily done by Touch Up. Is a lot of Baraka. I was not interested in playing Baraka as a kid. I didn't want to be a monster, which is weird because I really like playing a Blanka.
I loved Blanka and I liked Baraka okay, but he was not my main because Mortal Kombat introduced it, like, superpowers.
Yes.
You know, so I'm a Sub-Zero guy. But I did play as Baraka from time to time.
Yeah. Sub-Zero returning from Mortal Kombat 1, but a different guy.
Yeah. It's a title. It's like 007.
Yeah.
Yeah. The lore blows my mind through that. Other characters who are kind of fun, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Johnny Cage, because he punches people in the nuts. Mm-hmm. And because he has a thing where he can decapitate people, but there was a glitch in the first one where you could decapitate somebody multiple times, and they made that into a feature in this.
Congressional hearings, Gary.
Yeah, congressional, like, kids are going to be decapitating each other multiple times. Where you hit somebody's head off, and then you just do it again, another head pops out.
Uh-huh.
It's so good.
Yeah. I like Johnny Cage, like his weird, like, little force ball mm-hmm. having like an arc to it is real fun. Like, people don't know how to dodge that.
It also looks like something I could do. He kind of tosses like you're tossing keys.
Yep.
You know, like,
oh. Yeah, he was good. His friendship is real fun too, because he's a shitty actor. He gives you an autographed photo to my number one fan.
I love it.
Yeah.
We have Liu Kang, who is the hero, like kind of a poster boy character for this, you know, the main character.
Yeah.
Really good. This is considered to be the highest tier character in this game. Does a little disco dance, as we mentioned. His fatality presages the animality, because one of them turns into a dragon.
Yeah, it turns into a big dragon, then bites the enemy in half.
Yeah.
Which is fun. He's really dangerous at all distances, is the thing about him. It's like, he's a little bit boring because he's just a human guy who can do some fireballs. But yeah, he rips.
Yeah, he's cool.
And he's got a buddy now. He comes to Mortal Kombat 2 with a friend, with Kung Lao.
With a danger hat. Like a hat you wouldn't wear, because if you fell down, you would die.
Yeah.
This is a Liu Kang's best friend, the descendant of a warrior who first defeated Goro 500 years ago. What the fuck?
Super important in the lore. Like, he's the guy who sealed away the death god Shinnok.
Yes.
Like, like, huge retconning going on with Kung Lao.
How old is Liu Kang? he's got a razor-edged hat that he throws that is very appealing. And he's the first character. Another thing that I think is cool about Mortal Kombat is characters do things that feel like they break the rules, like teleport.
Yeah.
This is before Dalsim could teleport in the Street Fighter series. Like, that did not feel like a thing you could do.
Yeah.
And being able to zip around was really neat.
Yes. He gets that ability. Like, it's Raiden's teleport is what he has.
Yeah.
He feels like this weird little in-between between Liu Kang and Raiden to me. And I love his fatality, the hat slice, where he cuts somebody in half the hard way.
Yeah. It's the best way to slice.
Yep.
Melina is the other top tier character in the competitive scene. This is Katana's counterpart. Katana is a little bit less interesting. These are the ninja palette swaps. Mm-hmm. This is a clone created from the DNA of a Katana and a Tarkatan, or Tarkatan, Baraka's race. So she's got secret spike teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And she fights with a fan. Oh, no, she fights with a size.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Are you sure about this? It's not Katana who fights with a...
Katana fights Katana Fights with the Fans. Yeah.
Okay. The fan one is the one that is the top tier.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah. Katana was, as a kid, basically went between Scorpion and Katana, and I spent a lot of time with both of these. Katana rules.
Katana is very good. The fan thing, that her move where she kind of waves it and catches people in like a field, that is very strong.
It's really like the effect on that is really wild. It was really wide.
Yeah. And her fatality where she kisses somebody and they blow up. she can do inflation shit on people.
Yeah, like they blow up like Mario when he gets the pee balloon.
Yeah, they get totally tubular.
Yeah, and then they explode, and it's just femurs, nothing but femurs inside.
Nothing but femurs.
Yeah.
And then Katana. The one of the size is less interesting in terms of mechanics and story.
This is not like a great heuristic, but whenever a character looks like they're like less interesting, like, hey, this is just a little bit more boring to me, my instinct is, all right, this is really overpowered, I just don't know how to use it. This is just kind of boring. She has a teleport kick, which like is good for fighting the AI, but has like a psi throw, like a range attack that requires a charge, which is one of the few charge attacks in the game, so you can't whip it out very quickly.
Tap attacks really makes charge attacks more difficult to use and like kind of less viable.
Yeah.
You know, and this is something that I noticed in casual Street Fighter play as well. I preferred Guile, you know, as my character, starting out of characters who did projectiles, and Blanca, who are both charge and tap characters. And the meta was all Ryu and Ken, who could whip things out instantly.
Yeah.
Like, it is a big advantage.
Yes. And then one of her fatalities is just straight up just eating a guy.
Yeah. She's a spooky monster.
Revealing her fucked up mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. And we got Raiden again, Thunder God. This was real cool. I liked him in the first game, even though he's considered to be one of the worst in the game. I just liked him because he had lightning powers.
Yeah.
Here. And his friendship where he summons Kid Thunder, the smaller version of Raiden.
But with the same size hat as him. Like, it's his hat.
Big Hat Logan. It's very cute.
Just let me introduce you to my identical son.
Yeah, talk to me and my son anytime. It's really great. It's very sweet.
Yeah. Also returning from the first game, but playable this time, is Reptile.
Yeah.
Like, this is Shao Kahn's bodyguard, the furtive reptile so quickly forgotten. He's a palette swap. You know, he's a green version of the ninjas. But he's a real oddball. He's like a little bit of a mix between Sub-Zero and Scorpion, because like he has Sub-Zero's like movement control with that force ball. But also does like a bunch of
slide.
But has like rain stuff, he goes invisible.
Going invisible is interesting because it's only really useful against other players.
Yes,
the computer can obviously see you. It's also interesting when you get mirror matches and both players turn invisible. That is the kind of dumb chaos that you can get in Mortal Kombat and not in Street Fighter, I feel like.
Yeah.
Scorpion, iconic as well. We cannot talk about Scorpion.
Yeah.
Through the Scorpion, Sub-Zero are essential through this. This is another ninja warrior. He returns to life when he found out that Sub-Zero is back, even though it's a different Sub-Zero.
Yes.
Here. And he does get over here. He throws that spear and pulls you over and says, get over here. One of my most treasured memories, going on the New Orleans cemetery tour with Jeremy Greer, and our tour guide kept invoking this.
What?
People would be kind of straggling, and he'd keep going like, yeah, catch up, get over here, and say it in the Scorpion voice, and it was very funny.
Yeah.
I love
that.
Yeah, we got to have that, like, oh, did that just happen? Referencing Scorpion, huh? Very sweet. Treasure memory.
Nice. I like Scorpion quite a bit. Like, between the get over here, which leaves the enemy stunned, or just the teleport kick, where you just jump off the back of the screen and then reappear behind somebody. Mm-hmm. Not useful against the computer. They automatically know to block it, but against a person, it can trip them up a little bit. Yeah.
Both Scorpion and Sub-Zero are dog shit against the computer eventually through that. Even though they are my favorite characters in this.
Yeah. I don't think you should be able to block the spear or the ice blast.
You should. I mean, if you couldn't block it, it would be too easy.
Yes.
But I don't know what the answer is.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it just doesn't work on the embosses, too. Like, it is such a bad balance thing that Sub-Zero just doesn't, his moves just don't work. Mm-hmm. Like, Kentaro's not going to slip.
Nope.
Like, he's got traction.
Yeah. I also love the Flaming Skull fatality on Scorpion, where he takes off his hood and reveals that it's a skull, and then he breathes fire and, like, turns the enemy into a smoking skeleton, and you'll get a toasty off of that.
Yep. Shang Tsung, the boss of the first one, you can play him in this eventually, and he morphs into other characters the first time I'd seen that. That always seemed like a huge pain in the ass to me. Mm-hmm. But it is neat that you can be whatever... Theoretically, you can be whatever move you need.
Yeah.
At the time.
Never got a handle on him. Way too complicated.
Super complicated. Do not get it. But I do get Sub-Zero, the younger brother of the original Sub-Zero. And he is all about moving control. His special moves, other than his slide, don't do damage.
Yeah.
They put the enemy into kind of a lock state. And as we mentioned before, how powerful uppercuts are in this, you're basically getting a free uppercut. Mm-hmm. Which does more damage than a lot of super moves.
Yeah.
And the ice slide, or the ground freeze, where he freezes the ground, is very useful.
Yes.
Like, enemies will not always, the computer will not always anticipate this. Mm-hmm. It can be hard to get the ice blast and freeze somebody, but this is really good.
Yes. I also love the animation when somebody is slipping on the ice.
It's real basilisk falling animation from Dark Souls.
Yeah. Just real slapstick doofuses there. And his ice shatter fatality is fucking brutal.
He
just freezes somebody and then shatters femurs. Them. Yeah. Just femurs. Nothing but femurs all the way down.
I missed the spine, like, from the first one, but this is still great.
This is still great. And we missed, in our jumping around, we missed Jax, who plays really differently than everybody else. This feels a little bit like them trying to have a Zangief. Yeah. This is a wrestling guy. He does grabs and stuff. He was the leader of Sonya Blade's Special Forces unit, and he came to Outworld to rescue her.
Yeah. Jax is cool. This is before he has metal arms as well. He gets those eventually. They're hidden characters. You can unlock very esoteric conditions to get some of these hidden characters. Jade, you have to fight them first when you do these things. Jade, who is Katana's guardian, she will not be hit by projectiles, and she fights with both of their moves.
Yes.
Makes tons of sense for a palette swap character.
Mm-hmm. Kind of exactly what Reptile was in Mortal Kombat 1. Is what this was, and they're not playable, which weirded me out. I was like, I liked playing as Smoke. I liked playing as Noob Saibot. Nope, that is Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. You remember?
Just get a chance to fight them. It is genuinely. It felt scary when that would happen.
Uh huh.
Like, you'd get a thing. You found the portal to the Earth Realm, and you're going to fight a lost fighter for Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a cool thing for the developer to tell you you're going to do.
I like Smoke. Smoke is good. He is a friend of Sub-Zero's from the Lin Kuei. But in the,
like, how many of these characters are friends?
The stupid lore. Yeah.
What are they doing? What does that mean in this world? Like, what do you mean to be friends with, like, Baraka?
I don't know. I don't, like, think Baraka can do have friends.
You have blades that come out of your hands. You can't wipe your ass, man. Means you clean them up.
Yeah.
Huh. Gross.
No high fives, though. Imagine not being able to high five a buddy.
Yeah.
Smoke is just really fast. And he has, like, it's not a particle effect because that's in 3D. Constantly has smoke coming off of him, though.
Yeah, because he's a smoke elemental. To get this, you uppercut an enemy into the red portal. And then you have to do a button combo. And then we have Noob Saibot. This is a black silhouette of a ninja. This is the soul of Bai-Han, the first Sub-Zero. The name is Ed Boon and Tobias, backwards. That's why he's named Noob.
Yeah.
And he's the reptile for this game. He has all the moves from all the ninjas. You win him by unlocking, or by winning 25 matches in a row. And then I think you have to press, don't you have to press down when Toasty comes up? I think you have to press down if you have to have 25 matches in a row, and then the Toasty thing will come up. That's something that happens when you do
toasty.
A good job.
Yeah,
you have to press down, I think.
It's every 50th uppercut is when Toasty comes out.
Yeah. So you have to time that after that. And then you get to fight Noob Saibot.
Yeah. Nobody on the team knew that Noob Saibot was put in here. This is like an Ed Boon thing. People didn't know about Reptile. Like he put Reptile in like behind the back of the crew. And I guess they got salty about it.
It's wonderful.
I love
That's
it.
So fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and they didn't know about Noob Saibot until the development of Mortal Kombat 3.
Yeah. they have Kentaro here. This is what they originally wanted for Goro, mm-hmm. but they didn't have the graphical fidelity. This is Goro with tiger stripes. Mm-hmm. And he does a couple other moves. His fireball is slower and he's stronger and he cheats. He will chain throw you forever. Uh-huh. If he throws you, he'll just keep doing it if he decides to. And he does the Goro thing of flying off the top of the screen and falling back down.
Yep.
Which is what you need him to do if you want to beat him. Yes, that's the most vulnerable. If you jump kick backwards, you can hit him during mm-hmm. this.
It's the only time that he opens up. I just, so many memories of being a kid playing the Sega Genesis version of the game and just getting to Kentaro and not being able to get past him and being so fucking frustrated. Yeah. And this is like, as a kid, being able to deal with the fucked up AI to get there in the first place. Yep. Right?
Yeah. And Kentaro does not have the power that Goro has, I feel like.
No.
And then you get into a, whatever the horse one is. Can't remember his name right the second.
Fuck. Motaro. One. Yeah, Motaro.
Yeah, Motaro, what I'm not very interested in. Goro is the goat. Like, Goro is as good as it gets for Mortal Kombat monsters, I feel like. And then the end boss is Shao Kahn. This fucking sucks.
Yeah. We have Super Shredder at home.
Yeah. It's Super Shredder. He can do anything. Yeah. The only way you beat him is he'll taunt you. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's been taunting you as you play and kind of cheering you on. Every once in a while, he'll stop to say something. And if you happen to have already attacked and have an attack in the air, mm-hmm. when that happens, you will hit him.
Otherwise, you can't.
Yeah, this took a million tries. This was a very, like, in terms of quarters, this would have been ridiculous.
Yeah.
Very difficult to beat.
Yeah. Also, both of these bosses, both Kentaro and Shao Kahn, are damage sponges.
Yeah.
Like just their damage resistance is through the roof.
Yeah. Not good balancing for single player.
Yeah.
You know, and again, better fighting games are immune to this. Like Street Fighter 2 can get pretty cheap mm-hmm. as you get higher levels and stuff, and characters will do moves instantly. It is worse here.
Yeah.
When he dies, he starts shaking, and it goes through all the stages for some reason. Mm-hmm. And he turns to stone and explodes.
Yeah, and he says, "No, no, no, no."
We didn't talk about them because they're boring, but all these characters have endings for this too. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
For this. This is back in the day when you could have a video game that was like 99.9% the same, but you'd play it again to get a different screen.
Yeah, just a different text yeah, over like a portrait of the guy.
Nintendo 64 Resident Evil.
Yeah,
like
any
of those files. You also want to beat this game 16 times.
Fuck, RE3 had that.
Yeah.
The different epilogues. That's where you learned that like Sherry was taken into custody.
Yeah, sucks. There's a weird thing we had to deal with is how he used to live.
Yeah. And they're not, like, it's not especially interesting stuff. Like, oh, Baraka becomes a king. Cool.
It not only is it not interesting, but it does not impact the next game. So even if you don't care about the lore, like, they're just going to restart because this is what this is, kids drawing on the back of a notebook.
With, yes.
Like, the way that it's great also contributes to its lack of staying power.
Mm-hmm.
I still think, so kind of at the end of the thing, there's not a whole lot more to talk about. Neither of us are competitive players at this.
No.
I will say, like, in an arcade, I like picking this up and playing against somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is still really fun. Revisiting it was really fun. Looking at it is fun. Reading about it is fun.
Yes.
I am very in favor of Mortal Kombat existing. This kind of violence rules.
Mm-hmm.
Unapologetically. And I think that it is, I want more things like this in the world. I miss this time when something ultra violent could be seen as dangerous when it was this fucking silly.
Yeah. And also just like, it's fun to see, like, it is very fun to see a product of just pure enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, not just like, succeed, like that is, it's good to see a couple of Midwest boys make good, but to experience it and have it also just be like genuinely great in and of itself at the time, mm-hmm. you know, like doesn't hold up. Like there are so many better fighting games, but like, I guess this is less about Mortal Kombat 2 as a game and just more about Mortal Kombat as a thing generally as it existed through most of the 90s. It just delightful to be adjacent to, I guess.
Yeah. It definitely brought me back in terms of like feeling a different relationship to media.
Yeah.
Like the me that would run out into the street and yell a commercial does not exist. It's long dead. Has been killed so many times by so many things. Yeah. But getting kind of being reminded of that, like there was a time when something could do that to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that there's something kind of special about that. That feels very sweet.
Yeah.
You know, to me. And I miss it. You know, I'm in my nostalgia arc. My main hobby is remembering things. Mm-hmm. I am desperately at the end of Breakfast of Champions. Make me young, make me young, make me young. but I am. This was a really nice kind of underline for that.
Yeah,
bittersweet.
Just going back to tons of great memories of like playing these games with my cousin and like trying to figure out the character story and lore between the games and stuff. Like. Mm-hmm. How did Shang Tsung get young? Like, well, the actual answer for that is they didn't want to do old man makeup for the shoot. But it's like, well, shit. Okay, that's interesting. And then just like making up stories for the reason why people show up and then don't. Like, there is a certain element of that like mystery inferred story going on with this. That just I have tons of nostalgia for like just shooting the shit with my cousin talking about this. Yeah.
And it's worth noting, like, just in terms of general differences, like, Street Fighter is the main comparison. By having this emphasis on secrets and unlockables, mm-hmm. when you do that, you suggest a play space that doesn't exist as well.
Yeah.
It's like the good inversion of, you know, in Wolfenstein, if you hump a wall, it will sometimes open. That means any wall can have something, and you have to hump the wall. Like, that's bad. In this game, the fact that you can unlock a character means, like, anything felt possible in this. Like, I remember playing this with my friend on the home console, and we were doing a mirror match. We were both Liu Kang, and we did like a fireball at the same time, and the game froze.
Uh-huh.
Both fireballs were in the air, and we thought something had happened.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't think we had a glitch. You know, it didn't seem like a mechanical error. The way this game had kind of ensorcelled us, we thought something new. Like, we were going to, the next time we booted up, we were going to fight like Super Liu Kang, or we're going to have Hornbuckle or whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't true. It was just a glitch. But like muddying those waters is cool and hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen anymore.
Nope. It's immediately figured out.
Yeah. Sad.
Sad.
Thanks for sponsoring this, Chris. This was really fun to go back to. And kind of a weird, shorter episode, but hopefully you liked it.
Yeah. A good time was had by all. Hopefully you too, Chris.
If you're listening to this and you have any kind of product or project you'd like to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Have one here. It's kind of special. Our composer and producer, Gwen, is open for commissions. Mm-hmm. So if you like the music on Best Quality Vacuum and Orb and Real Itch Hours, and you'd like to commission her for some music, send her an email at gwen@duckfeed.tv.
Yes. Not just Real Itch Hours, every season of Real Itch Hours, each of which has a different style. She's really good.
So if you have a podcast or you have a thing you'd like a short piece of music for, or even long piece of music, I don't know what she's willing to do, ask her. Mm-hmm. Gwen at duckfeed.tv.
Yes. If you have thoughts about Mortal Kombat 2, you have time. You can write in by February the 15th. That is the same for Mega Man X4 and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Duckfeed.tv/contact. Write in if you have thoughts about multiple games, separate them into multiple responses, and please be specific and concise.
Yeah. We really appreciate that. And if you have thoughts about the next month's games, the March's games, which are the Final Station, and this includes the DLC, The Only Traitor, Donkey Kong Country 2, or Castlevania Bloodlines, right in by the 15th of that month.
Yes. We recently did some Patreon changes. You can go and check out the announcement for those. It's all exciting stuff. Like, get more unfilmable. Mm-hmm. We're talking about horror movies twice a month.
Yeah, and all kinds of abject sufferings and bonus wafts and stuff. Episode we're doing this month on Indiana Jones, which is a cool, interesting game. Everyone's mm-hmm. going to get the generalities. Patrons are going to get the full thing.
Yeah, and bump up to $10 to get those adaptation tickets.
Yeah, which are, every time we talk about Mortal Kombat, it's good. There's a cartoon for that, for this game, and it's fucking horrible.
It's so bad.
Yeah, but there's an album that's a masterpiece. So, like, who can say if it's good or bad? The, yeah, and in either case, please rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast directory of choice. Tell your friends, write about us on message boards, share a post. If you see people talking about Mortal Kombat, say, hey, here's some stuff about Mortal Kombat. All that stuff helps a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And big thanks to Gwen, our producer.
Thank you, Gwen. Yeah.
Yeah. What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for when we finish it. This episode, I mean.